This time, for our parenting slot, we are joined once again by Colman Nocter, child and adolescent psychotherapist, and of course, author. Colman, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Sean.
First question is a bit of a long one, so here we go. We're at a loss as to how to handle this. My daughter is almost 18 months old. I drop her off at the creche at 7:30, pick her up at 5 p.m. The girls in the creche say she's as good as gold. They've never seen any untoward behaviour. They've never even seen her cry. This is the little girl I know. But in the last few weeks, when I pick her up at 5 p.m, she acts up hugely. We go home. I get dinner ready. All she wants to do is be up in my arms. I used to be able to pot around with her in my arms, but she's too big for that now. I'm also 4 months pregnant. She lifts up her arms, indicating she wants to be picked up. And sometimes I do. But when I say no, Mummy is making the dinner, she will often throw a fit. The worst was last night when my husband came home. All he wanted was a little time with her, but she was not remotely interested in him and threw a fit when he picked her up. When this happens, we ignore her. But how long should we let this go on for? I really think all it is that she wants me, that she is craving my affection. But if I come home and have things to do, how do I handle this, says Maria.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, first of all, you can take from that email how close she is to this girl. I mean, this little baby is very well looked after by her mum, and she loves her dearly. But I suppose it's a commonality of Irish parents at the moment, that idea that, you know, you drop this kid off in creche and you collect them in the evening, and there is that little window of time to try and spend some time with her. And I suppose that can go either way. I mean, you can have a very clingy child or a very rejecting child. And I've been on the receiving end of both of those. You know, when you collect your kid from creche in the evening, sometimes they'll stare at the window and ignore you, and other times they want to be up in your arms the whole time. I mean, I think what's clear here is there's kind of an enmeshed attachment, which is all very normal at that age if she's only 18 months old. But what's interesting is she's looking for proximity when mum is busy. Now, I might be a bit far reaching on this, but I think she said the behaviour change is a few weeks old, so look for a trigger, so what's different? Yeah. She also said she's 4 months pregnant. If we think about it, you usually start telling people around 3 months. So for the last month, there's probably been a change in mum, or a change in conversation, or a change at home that perhaps she's picking up on. Now, no way an 18-month-old knows the ins and outs of what's coming or anything different. But if you have a very strongly attuned relationship with your daughter, it's a two-way street. So she's going to pick up a difference in mum, or maybe you pick up a difference in conversations around her. Mum is also maybe a little bit more hesitant about picking her up since she's realised she's pregnant. You know, these children pick up on these things even at that age, and they don't know what it is, but they can react quite severely to it. I suppose from mum's point of view, what does she do? The tantrum around dad is about, oftentimes your small children they'll reject the other caregiver in order to intensify the attachment with the one that they want. So it's in order to not dilute the caring for her by allowing dad to help her. But in actual fact, that's what they need to do more, is to try and kind of wean this child off that intensity to mum by introducing dad a little bit more. I mean, again, the tantrum behaviour, she said, I don't know where she learnt that from. I don't think children and toddlers learn tantrums. They're kind of it's an innate built skill that they have to kind of secure what they need. But I think that's pretty normal. I think she just needs to ride that out a little bit. Lots of reassurance. I mean, you don't reject the child, but I mean, if she gives in to her every whim and carries her around like she did before, the child's not going to be is going to get the sense that there is something to be feared and something to be wrong. So I think lots of reassurance. Involve dad more now rather than when baby comes. Don't leave it till that moment when things are going to change dramatically for her. And just try and reassure her around that. For 18 months old, because language is so limited, it's so hard to communicate that. But you can do that by, you know, reassuring her that you're still thinking about her when you're washing up and doing the dishes. Because the child is relating, I have to be up in your arms and in your face in order to secure that you're thinking of me. And if you're doing the dishes, you can't be, which is not obviously true. But it is about a kind of a weaning process around that and trying to help her, because unfortunately that attachment is going to be diluted by the second child anyway. So it's about preparing her over the next number of months for that.
God. But she's only 18 months, so she wouldn't necessarily have a very strong awareness that there's another baby on the way.
I wouldn't. And again, this is probably the controversial bit. I mean, obviously I come from a psychoanalytic background, so I believe children pick up on these things from very early on. And I think the attunement over the first 18 months with mum is very, very... that's very close. It's very knitted. So she may sense that something is different. It's no more than that. But if it's something different, it could be something threatening, and the child just wants to be around more and wants to secure you more a little bit from that. But obviously not able to articulate that, no. And not able to cognitively understand it either. And so that's why she gets tantrums and she just wants to be up all the time.
Yeah, but you would wonder why the behaviour has changed.
Yeah, and again, I would only be able to see that the pregnancy is the new news. It's the new bit. This is a kind of an angelic child. Never heard her cry in creche, which was giving me an indication that this child got a lot of what she needed and got it quite quickly.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So this is the first child. You know, there is a doting element. You don't want to see them upset. You have two of you there, you know, to give that time, to give that energy to the first child. Unfortunately, when the second one comes around, you can't really have that level of availability. Mm. So she may see her cry and be a bit more disgruntled a bit more regularly.
Yeah, I wonder how long she's been going to the creche for.
If it's maternity leave, maybe 6 months, so she's probably there 12 months.
She's well used to it then. It's not a new thing for her. Right, next question is, my daughter is 4 months old. I now have a 9 month old daughter, 4 years old, that would be physically impossible. My daughter is 4 years old. I now have a 9 month old daughter also. My firstborn is not handling sibling rivalry very well. I'm worried it's now getting dangerous for my baby. The other day, a friend who was babysitting witnessed my four-year-old stuff a sock down my baby's throat. I'm praying it's child's play. Should I be more worried?
I would also always look at the intent and context rather than the act. I mean, only a few weeks ago, I found my six-month-old with two Smarties in their mouth that my 3-year-old had given her, you know, so they're not intending that. Does the child know that the sock is a choking device? Probably not. That you wouldn't know what context that was in. So always look at intent rather than the act when it comes to children. Was there kind of an intentional act to hurt the other child? I've thought about this. This comes up a lot in terms of sibling rivalry. It comes up in questions a lot. Maybe we're a bit over idealistic about that. Siblings bicker and they bicker for their whole lives.
Yeah.
Maybe it's about trying to teach them to respect each other and resolve conflict rather than having an idealistic notion that they'll get on together. Because in majority of cases, siblings don't get on an awful lot. And there is the age difference is a factor, the difference in gender. You know, I have two older sisters. They hated the fact that I didn't wash up as much as they did. You know, those kind of things. And maybe it's just about trying to resolve conflict and kind of referee it. And maybe it's not about this, because I think we're sold a notion that we can have this kind of almost Brady Bunch issue that we all get on famously. And maybe that's not entirely what the goal is.
Well, yeah, I've three daughters and they fight all the time. but most of the time I find it impossible to referee because they didn't witness the events, and they're all old enough now to give me their own very polished versions of what happened. So generally, I don't. I just say stop shouting, but figure it out.
And refereeing sibling rivalry is not for the faint-hearted, you know, especially when they're smaller. I mean, again, this little kid is 4. I mean, we'd think sibling rivalry peaks between the ages of 1 and 3 because dependency is much higher on the parent. They're still maybe toilet training, still need some feeding. When they're about 4, they're maybe starting school. They may have friends outside of the home, so they're not terribly dependent on children. So maybe he's a little bit behind the curve on this, but he has had 3.5 years of mummy and daddy to his own, so this is a new thing. Again, looking at intent, I mean, there can be overt hostility towards another child when they arrive, and you do have to manage that. You have to understand it and be sympathetic to it, but you do have to manage it because the safety of the newborn is obviously paramount. But from the point of view of, I think you have to sympathise with the older sibling in some respects. One of the habits I think that we do is and maybe this is going to come later on, when a younger child is crying for a toy or something, we say to the older one, oh, just give it to them, you know, because they're the one that's kind of more negotiable. You can kind of articulate an argument. But that's really unfair on the older one that they have to keep giving it to the one that's moaning. And we do it for a quiet life. And oftentimes all the bad habits of parenting come out of wanting something a bit easier than having to go through it. But I think expecting them to share things at that age, I mean, again, that's probably coming down the line later on, but he's just sharing time at the moment. This newborn is going to take up a lot of time. It's a big change. He's trying to manage it. He's still only 4, so he's not in any way articulate enough for that.
It's actually a little girl, the 4-year-old.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but that's probably not that. Well, it might be important in the sense that, could the 4-year-old still regard the 9-month-old as like a dolly rather than think of her as a fully formed human being.
Absolutely, entirely. Because they wouldn't have the capacity of what to know what is dangerous. And that's why intent, like, and sometimes you can see, an older sibling hug a new baby really tightly.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of sense, does he know or she know that that's actually uncomfortable? Perhaps there is an element of, you know, intensity to that. But sometimes, like the giving the Smarties, they were just being sharing with them and then being nice to them. They didn't realise the danger. So again, just look at context and intent. But I think we can get alarmed about that. But it's fairly normal sibling behaviour. And once you can maintain the safety of the smaller child and work with the older one. But I would just not give them a hard time. It's a tough time for them, and just try and, you know, coach them through it and help them through it. And again, you know, I just thinking about in my own situation, that temptation to give it to the whiny child just to keep them quiet, that must be tough on the older one.
Kathy has this question. I have a 5.5-year-old boy, Alex, with Down syndrome. Very high functioning and intelligent. He wakes at 6 a.m. and we are all wrecked. Our little girl, who is 3, wakes at 8 a.m. We have to move them in together in a few months, as baby number 3 is due in November. I'm worried what will happen. We are using Grow Clock and it's working somewhat, but please help.
Well, you're going to have 3 children under 6, so you're
about
to get more wrecked,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
Taken from me. The early riser is a difficult one. And it's a commonality in children with Down syndrome. About 20%, 17% of children wake early. And it's difficult, but it's to be managed in the same way. The grow clocks do tend to work if the child can grab the concept. That's a clock.
What's a grow?
It's kind of a clock that shows day and night. So basically, it has a kind of a moon on it. And when it gets to 7 a.m. or when you set to an acceptable time, it'll turn to sunshine. So the child doesn't need to know how to read the time, but they can associate that I don't get up until the sun is on my clock.
Right, okay.
So if I look up and it's still the moon, then I know it's still nighttime.
Mm.
So, and they're very effective. They work very well. Many people would swear by them. But in terms of how do you manage it, again, I suppose it's no different. You would do the same as a waking in the night routine. It's walking back to the bedroom, trying to, you know, resettle them, sticking with it. You need to be clear about what's an acceptable time to get up and what's not. Oftentimes with these children, I would look at the bedtime routine again. If he's waking that early consistently, maybe he's gone to bed a bit early. So he's 5 now. I mean, if he's napping in the day, like making sure he's napping earlier rather than later. But if you set him down later, check the bedtimes, maybe stagger the bedtimes in terms of, because this mum is worrying about having 2 in the same room. Is he going to wake the other child when he gets up? So staggering bedtime is not a bad thing. You know, you should really give a child 15 or 20 minutes extra for each year that they're older. You know, in terms of one goes at 7, one goes at 7:20, you're hoping that one is settled before the other one's going down. And hopefully that will feed into the morning time as well. There's no mystery to this. This is just the same as a nighttime waker, as an early morning waker. It's about trying to be consistent and doing that horrible night walk back to the bed and things like that. But consistency and sticking with it, and just check the bedtimes, making sure that they're okay, and maybe trial keeping up a bit longer.
Actually, there's a question that I skipped over. I have an almost 8-year-old girl driving me nuts. She's very intelligent, but will not do a single thing she's asked without a row. She is sarcastic, answers back, and generally disrespectful. If she rolls her eyes at me once more, I may actually start self-medicating. Sensible chats, time out in a room, grounding, giving out, star charts, banning TV, etc., have all been tried unsuccessfully, as she doesn't seem to care about anything.
Yeah, I'm interested in people who ask a question saying, I've tried everything, what should I do? Because you're kind of running out of things to suggest. But
yeah.
I suppose, again, I've said this before, it's the application of each of these things rather than the thing themselves. So it is about, I mean, what I'd say to you is you don't have to accept that level of cheekiness and abuse. So again, you do is you re-engage your child and say, this is the new rule, this is what is acceptable and this is what's not. She is 8, so you still have considerable level of parental authority over this child to manage her. I mean, again, I suppose compose yourself. Mum seems, even in that email, to be quite at the end of her rope.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the, you know, self-medicating
not a good idea,
and it's a relief that she's not leading to medicating the child. So self-medicating means she sees her own need to manage herself in that. Herself and dad need to be absolutely united on that, regain control, maintain composure, institute rules, and absolutely stick by them. You have to be uber consistent with a child like this when you're trying to undo a habit forming exercise that she's done. Maybe just check out, she's 8. I mean, she may be just getting it wrong. She might be repeating something that she thinks is cool or something that she thinks is trendy and maybe needs some coaching around how she socially skills. But the sarcasm and the eye rolling, it's a bit preteen. She's a bit young for that.
It's a bit young for the tweenies, yeah.
I'd wonder about where what she's watching on TV. Is she hanging around with older cousins or siblings or something, or seeing some of that? Or does mum or dad treat each other that way? Again, we always have to look at our own role modelling in that. But absolutely compose yourself, take control of it, re-engage with, and again, it comes back to, you know, grounding, sanctions, and getting being on, explaining what's acceptable and what's not, and acting on what's unacceptable. Parenting is simple, it's just not easy.
That's the thing, because I have a suspicion that when she says, we've tried, you know, a long list of things that they've tried there, how long have they tried them for?
Yeah.
Because, you know, have you tried it for 6 months, which would be a huge chunk of an 8-year-old's life?
Yeah.
They would have got the message by now.
Yeah.
And it's probably, we tried it for a week and it didn't work. Because it's exhausting to do this stuff.
For sure. But it is about, and I was saying to you the last time, you know, missing out on a day in the park is better. It's better to turn around the car and go home and actually make a point then, you know, suffer another 6 months of that behaviour. It is about really investing in it over the short time. But I heard a great one recently about, you know, sanctioning maybe teenagers who with their devices. And a colleague of mine was suggesting, don't take the device, take their charger. Because then you can watch them learn how, and trying to save the battery time agonizingly as they think about the consequences of their behavior. But
but hide your charger as well.
For sure.
Because actually, one of the things mine row about is the only charger at which they're screaming. They nearly tried to strangle each other with the charger when they find it. Coleman, thanks a million for coming into us today. Coleman Nocter there.